Today we have with us Adam Nathan, who is the founder and CEO of Almanac. They're the fastest wiki and workflow tool ever built. If you're joining us for the first time, the Entrepreneur's Handbook is all about sharing inspiring startup stories with practical takeaways, and we interview some of the best entrepreneurs across the world. So Adam's chosen to focus today on the modern work method and why it's a key way that you listening right now would be able to run your company more effectively. So Adam, could you tell us, why is the modern work method so important to you? Why do you believe in it?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on. As you said, I'm the founder and CEO of Almanac, which is a wiki and workflow tool that makes distributed teams faster. We save, on average, distributed teams more than 1 million hours in wasted work each year through fewer meetings and faster responses and less overhead. And my journey to Almanac started 8 years ago. I was a product manager for Almanac at companies like Apple and Lyft and Varo. And while my job technically was about building products people love, what I was actually spending my days doing was sitting in back-to-back meetings, constantly trying to answer the nonstop flow of Slack messages and emails, all over often very basic things like, did my boss read the document I sent? And what did the team think of my idea? And did I get approval? And my days just often felt like pushing a stick through mud. A lot of motion and activity, but very little progress. And I had this contrast with the engineers I worked with who used a tool called GitHub. And for those who don't know, GitHub is a code collaboration platform that allows engineers to collaborate asynchronously on what they're working on. And the engineers I worked with were both way more productive than I was and seemingly happier. And so I started to think, is there a different way of working that technical teams, engineers are clued in on, but the rest of us haven't caught up to yet? And that's what led to Almanac. And so the goal of Almanac has never been just to build a better tool or to try and reinvent the wheel when it comes to like document editors or Google Docs or Microsoft Word, but really to think about how to optimize how we work for the age of the internet. We obviously, even if you're in office or you're working online these days, you're communicating, you're writing, you're chatting, you're even having videos on the internet, and yet we're still really all operating as if we're in the same place at the same time. And while that wasn't great before, it's pretty untenable in a world where you might be in different time zones or even on different continents than your coworkers. Before we started building anything with Almanac, what we wanted to do is try and understand how the best teams were already working on the internet. And so what we did was start to talk to high-performing teams at companies like Amazon and Netflix and Stripe. Today, we've talked to over 5,000 professionals. And what we were trying to understand is how have you figured out how to work on the internet? What was the moment of insight? How have you codified that? And across all those interviews, we've tried to extrapolate themes that we see present across different industries and company sizes and functional areas to try and figure out rules of the road for working, almost like how agile is a theory for engineers. What we've tried to do with the modern work method is illuminate a way of working for people who want to move faster on the internet. And Almanac as a product is really a way to adopt a lot of those principles without having to think about it.
So we're going to go through like the different stages of the modern work method now, right? And hopefully people listening right now can take that away with them, and that's going to help them in what they're doing in their careers and their companies. So the first one you've got is definitions over deadlines. So tell us about that. What makes that so important?
Yeah, well, I think when we talk to a lot of these teams, the highest purpose of most teams is to deliver business value fast. Everybody wants to, move the ball forward or pick your metaphor, move the needle, push the ball forward. Everyone wants to move faster in making things happen. And so most of the teams we talked to, almost all of them, in fact, their goal in thinking about how they work was to say, how can we speed things up? And often one way, what we tried to do with some of these principles is to help people make decisions with choosing one thing over another. A lot of teams think that one way to move faster is to set deadlines and, to say like, oh, if I only give us, 2 days instead of 5 days to do this, things will go faster. Unintuitively, that doesn't actually happen, despite the kind of emotional stress that is created by setting an unachievable deadline and the, malaise and depression that can set in after if a team feels like its managers and leaders are setting goals that are unrealistic that they're going to fail at before they even get started. The best way to help your team move faster, we've learned, is to agree on a common definition of success. So rather than saying, we wanted this project to be done by X date, say, we want this project to be done when Y things are achieved. When we're hitting, this particular quantitative metric, or when there's this, qualitative sentiment, or when we built something. And why that helps teams move faster is because then everybody on the team understands what done really means, and everybody can make their own independent autonomous decisions to help get to done, to help get to that point faster. That means it needs to be less management, less overhead, less chaos, because everybody is aligned and moving in the same direction. And so it's really important when you're starting a new project or setting up a new team to, before you dive into things and start rushing towards the deadline, to agree on a common definition of success, which even if it's a little slower at the beginning, means everybody can move faster downstream.
Yeah, I remember when I used to have a job, there was often these cases, we had these status meetings, but it'd be maybe twice a day. So in between the meetings, you only had a very short amount of time to actually get things done. And then each meeting, you'd just be talking about the deadlines that are coming up. It's like, well, we're just getting there faster because we're spending time talking to each other as opposed to actually getting work done, like you said. And then if we move on to the next point as well, so that structure of improvisation, what made you pick that statement?
Yeah, well, I think you hear a lot with the crowd that wants to return to the office that there's like this, you know, magic in in-person collaboration, and there's these like hallway chats that leads to great ideas. You know, despite the fact that there's no real evidence or anecdotes that support those ideas, you know, a common ethos is, well, if we're together and we get together in a room and we talk, then we'll have to figure something out. And this often comes up, especially in like creative activities like brainstorming. You know, when we talk to people about good brainstorming and bad brainstorming, the difference isn't whether you're in a room together or even if the brainstorm is happening at the same time, it's whether there's structure involved. I think most of us can think of an in-person brainstorm in a room that went absolutely horribly. You know, it wasn't clear what we were brainstorming on. There weren't enough ideas. The loudest voice tended to dominate the conversation. There wasn't a decision made about what to do. Nobody had any next steps from it. So it just kind of felt like a waste of time. And so having a good brainstorm or a bad brainstorm, having, you know, a good meeting or a bad meeting doesn't have to do with whether you're in person or whether you're even having a synchronous conversation at all. It has to do with whether you have structure. And the structure means being intentional at the start around what you're trying to achieve in a project, in a meeting, in a workflow, making sure everyone understands their role, ideally identifying a decision that is made at the end of that activity so that people know it's done, following up with next steps. And you know, those elements of structure are important both for things that naturally align themselves to structure, like setting an approval process, but they also are really important even in things like brainstorming or creative activities, because structure generally helps people understand how stuff is supposed to get done, and that, again, allows them to move faster.
Yeah. And then another big part of this talk, we're going through these next steps, is transparency of a need to know as well. So how does that stand out? What makes that?
Yeah, well, you know, just for some history, office culture, as I think many of us experienced it in the early 2000s or the 1990s, is really an artifact of the post-World War II factory production system, where essentially, you know, back in the, you know, industrial era for Europe and the United States, there was a factory floor, there were assembly lines, you know, widgets were produced, people had certain roles on that line. And then, you know, management like literally sat above the floor, like looking at everything. And if you're working on the line, you know, your job was to do one thing and one thing only. You may need to know a little bit about what's happening ahead and behind you, but, you know, you don't have to concern yourself with how the whole thing was working. You just had to make sure to do your job well. You know, management was above commanding and controlling over the factory floor. And that kind of, that model of work continued even into white collar work, like professional services, consulting, finance, even creative work, where you know, people had individual functional roles, and, you know, you're supposed to sit in your cubicle and do your work and then hand your work up to a manager, and then they would coordinate it. And despite the fact that that doesn't really feel good, it doesn't empower people to contribute everything they have. It really doesn't work well in a distributed or remote context. People need information in the modern era in order to make good decisions, get great results and move faster. You know, managers need to find a role for themselves other than, you know, gaining power by controlling or constraining information. You know, that's a very fear and negatively oriented way to manage, to say like, oh, you know, you need me because I have something you don't have. We think, you know, the best managers lead by influence. People want to work with them. They want their feedback. They want their support. And so, you know, it requires managers in the modern era to learn a different way of operating. That's not just about commanding and controlling in an assembly line for white collar work. What we heard with the best teams is that transparency was the norm. Those teams overshared information. They demoed or showed work even before it was perfect. Teams were quick to, you know, highlight blockers or obstacles they were having, places where they were behind, and they weren't afraid to ask for help. They knew that asking for help wasn't going to make them look bad in the eyes of their manager or the team. It'd actually make them look stronger. When one manager talked about this idea of don't be a hero, where the people on his team that failed the most were people that tried to fix up on their own instead of asking for help and working with the team. Overall, organizing information in a way where people can find it so that teams aren't being constantly pinged with questions on Slack or an email that could easily be answered asynchronously. So this idea of transparency as a norm on high-performing teams is, I think, helpful even if you're in an office all the time, but absolutely critical if you're working in a distributed fashion.
Hey, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to find some of the best lessons from season one of this podcast, then you can download our free ebook using the link in the show notes. You'll also get updates multiple times a week from our editors here at Entrepreneur's Handbook, all aimed at helping you become a better entrepreneur and helping you to grow and scale your business. Let's get back to the show. One thing I remember as well is how if you don't give the information up front, right, and people know it's hidden, then sometimes the actual information can be quite positive. But if you don't know, then people are going to speculate. And that speculation, they can worry it to be more negative than it actually is. And I remember seeing this in different places at different companies and things like that, where you see, because something is being hidden from them, they assume it's bad news. Our minds think straight away, go to bad news, okay, something must be wrong. Whereas actually, they're just hiding it for the sake of hiding the information.
I think a lot of it goes back to trust. You know, do managers trust their employees, and then do employees trust their managers? I think if it's kind of like a relationship where there's a vicious or virtuous cycle when it comes to trust. You know, if you think your partner is lying to you or hiding stuff from you, you're going to be much more skeptical. You're going to go looking for stuff, maybe even more than you were initially looking for. Then your partner might start hiding more stuff from you because they don't want you to see certain things, and so. It's often a cycle that's hard to break in companies, which is why moments like, you know, moving to a hybrid or distributed style of work, starting a new team, starting a new project are great moments to reset how you're working, because it provides kind of like a natural breakpoint or restart moment for the team to reestablish norms. And a lot of these things I'm talking about are not just about buying a tool or like setting up a new folder system. They're behaviors. And we think that the fastest performing teams are distinct from the from lower average performing teams because not because they have necessarily smarter people that went to better colleges or have more work experience. It's because the teams operate better together. You see this dynamic all the time in rowing, where the teams that end up winning rowing races aren't the men in a boat that are like look the strongest. It's the boat that pulls water at exactly the same time, paddles in, paddles out, and it's this idea that. If you're operating in a smooth way, you operate faster. The Marines have a slogan that we like to repeat to our customers, which is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. You need to invest time up front in order to make things work well. And if things work well, you end up achieving much more progress on the back end.
And I've already picked up from you during this podcast so far that you're not the biggest fan of meetings. And your next point talks more to that point, right? What's the alternative to meetings? Because that's what so many people are used to, right?
Yeah, well, I think I haven't met a person that like loves a bad meeting. I think, you know, meetings can be really useful when you have a complex question to answer or a lot of ambiguous context to discuss. But, you know, there's a lot of meetings that happen that shouldn't. And there's a phrase, you know, that meeting could have been a document. And so in general, a lot of what these ideas are about is choosing one thing over another. And, you know, we believe that most of the time you should start with a document. And so before you even schedule the meeting, write your idea or your question or your proposal down in a document, and then ask yourself, you know, do I need to have a meeting about this, or can I share it asynchronously for feedback or approval? And so if you start with a document versus starting with a meeting, you end up saving a lot of people's time because you can get their input or their feedback when it's appropriate for them, rather than, at a time that blocks up part of people's most valuable work days. On the back end, there's kind of documenting the work itself, but then there's also documenting your processes and your structures and your decisions. And A lot of people have a meeting, but then they don't actually write down what happened in the meeting. And so if you weren't in the meeting, you have no idea about the decision or the context for it or what happens next. And so, yeah, we strongly advocate for documentation, and documenting everything, writing stuff down even that you don't think you need to write down. Because while it's not useful for you at you know, in your exact current moment, the further away someone is from you, the longer someone is from the time when you were making the decision or creating something, the more useful it is. And, you know, a lot of time is wasted in companies where people are just asking, like, have we done this before and what happened? Or like, how did we come to this decision? Or like, what was the context on this? You know, McKinsey has done research that 40% of people's time is just spent trying to find information like that every week. And so, you know, we believe in general, writing everything down from start to finish through a workflow can both help you make better decisions, but also help your team move faster in the end. And the best companies we've talked to, like, you know, Amazon and Stripe are famous for their writing cultures. And those writing cultures, if you listen to Jeff Bezos, he's talked a lot about this. The writing cultures help people structure their ideas better. They help lead to better discussions and decisions. But they also lead to faster momentum on the back end because people understand why something is the way it is.
Yeah. And I think it's something which I'm very conscious of now in my own businesses is that if you don't document something, then if you keep doing it yourself and you're changing your processes, then when one day you can't do it for whatever reason, you can't hand over that process because there's nothing there. And I think it's quite common maybe in startups for people to be so focused on growth that they don't do those processes. And like you said, because those processes aren't there, it can cause so many problems. And you don't want the document there for when you need it, because then it's already too late, right? You want the document there in advance so that it's always protected. And it's changing that mindset, I think, is really important for people in early stage companies as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this like idea that was started by Google where, like, you know, it's kind of laissez-faire Silicon Valley culture where if we get some smart people in a room and we just do stuff, then growth will happen. And that really only occurs in the rarest of situations like Google, where you're creating a search engine that indexes the internet and prints out money. You know, most companies need to work in a far more deliberate way. And, you know, even if you're focused on growing fast, you know, the number one question of growth teams is often like, have we done a test on this before? Like, what did we learn? You know, so that you're not repeating work or invalidating stuff that you already know. And so growth teams, especially like marketing and sales, need to document stuff so that they are testing and learning and iterating off of a common foundation of knowledge, and rather than starting from scratch every single time. That certainly doesn't help them move faster or better.
I love the next point as well of the modern work method, because I remember this was one of my biggest frustrations whenever I had a job, is the time it takes someone to get feedback, where you might be told something 6 months later. As what if you told me that at the time, I could have made adjustments and I could have got better. Whereas now it's so much later on that it's hard for me to adjust and improve. You can't improve the performance in hindsight, right? So tell us more about this short feedback cycles over the extended deliberation.
Yeah. You know, one thing that we've heard again and again from teams is this idea that the eventual quality of a product or a project is directly correlated to the number of iterations that the team went through on it. I think people often have this mistaken notion that if they work really, really hard on, you know, one iteration and they try and make it perfect, that the outcome will be better. And I think that's what people often do. In reality, they delay and delay over making more and more tweaks on, say, a new landing page or a new feature or an outbound sales sequence or a line of code, when really the thing that will help you improve and make things better is to get feedback from your end users. In many cases, that's your customers. One thing we've heard from teams is that, you know, iteration over iteration, version over version, you can only be so much better. Like maybe sometimes if you're lucky, you can make it 2x better, but most of the time you're making it 20, 30% better. And so the law of compounding applies to work products just as much as it does to anything else in the universe, where the more you iterate, the more you get feedback, the more you learn, the more you can make it better. And so in a given period of time, you know, if you iterate, let's say, you know, 5 times versus 1 time, it's not that your work is actually 5 times better. It's something more, it's more like 15 times better, because the learning and the growth are compounded version over version. And so your curve, it looks more like a exponential curve where you're learning more and more because you're getting more and more feedback. And so we recommend in the modern work method that teams take a bias towards action ship stuff essentially to get rapid feedback rather than waiting till you think it's perfect. Giving everybody the information they need to move quickly, and getting a prioritizing kind of results over opinions. You know, a lot of teams like to sit in meetings saying like, I think this, no, I think that. The only opinion that really matters is the opinion of the person who's using your product or paying for it. And so making sure you're optimizing for short feedback cycles, shipping stuff, even if it's not perfect, getting valid feedback on it, and then iterating is the best way to actually counterintuitively make something perfect and grow really fast.
So we've got one more pillar left of the modern work method. Do you remember it? So it's insights over outcomes.
Yeah, you know, this kind of goes to a famous book by Carol Dweck about this idea of a growth mindset. Often people anchor on an outcome like, I want to climb this tall mountain. And if you talk to people who are mountain climbers, they'll often say, you know, the summit is anticlimactic in many ways. Like, it's, people spend a lot of time imagining an outcome and how good it'll feel. But in reality, when people reach a mountaintop, they start thinking about the next mountain they want to climb. It's true for outdoors adventurers. It's also true for modern professionals, where people anchor emotionally and intellectually onto an outcome and put all their hopes and dreams on it. And that can be bad, because both achieving that outcome is often, it doesn't feel as good as you think it will, but it also focuses on the wrong thing. The best way to achieve outcomes is actually to focus on not your rate of progress towards that outcome, but your rate of learning. The more you learn, the more you can change, the more you can grow, the more you can pivot based on the insights you're learning. And so incentivizing learning actually counterintuitively helps a team achieve more success than pushing a team towards that success or outcome in the first place. And so, you know, tactically, we see the best teams holding things like retros or meetings to review both what goes well and what didn't go well in a project. Managers always asking for feedback before they give feedback, sharing learnings and celebrating failures publicly so that everybody can understand, making customer feedback readily available to anybody who wants to read it so that everybody can learn rather than just the person who's talking to customers. Those are all tactical ways to build a culture of learning, build a culture of insight over a culture that just celebrates success.
So I think there's so many takeaways from what you've said today, but if like the people listening right now, if they had to take away one thing with them, what do you think would make maybe the biggest impact for their companies in terms of applying some of the lessons you've learned?
Yeah, it's three things. I mean, I think overall, if you remember anything, it's more structure, more transparency, and fewer meetings. The best teams out there, the teams that are moving the fastest, universally are working with a lot more direction than many think is necessary. They're working with a lot more transparency than some teams are comfortable with, and they're working with way fewer meetings. And again, all those things are kind of counterintuitive, I think, to the average team that's stuck in office culture for 30 years. But if you want to succeed, if you want to move fast, if you want to beat your competitors and win in this modern economy, the best thing to do is to work with more structure, more transparency, and fewer meetings.
If we look now briefly as well about what you're doing at the moment, right? So with Almanac growing very fast, where is your excitement? What are you working on at the moment that you're really excited by that is driving you forwards?
Yeah, it's an exciting time, I think, to be alive. There's, you know, a lot of new technologies and changes in how we live and work that are disrupting, you know, every part of society. I think, you know, just in the last 4 years, we first had, thanks to the pandemic, a huge shift in where and when and how we work, which is through remote and hybrid and distributed contexts. I think that's, you know, fundamentally disrupting not just what how you and I spend our days, but what downtowns look like and public infrastructure systems and small businesses and tax bases. You know, there's I think a multi-decade fallout from the pandemic where, you know, even though many parts of our lives went back to normal, the one part that I think has shifted fundamentally is how we work. And so it's exciting to be part of that and see what's happening. You know, it's I laugh every time you see like a company really just beg people to go back to the office because nobody wants to, because working from home is often far more effective, more flexible, more efficient for people, whether it's parents or caregivers or just people that, you know, like want to make a healthier lunch at home. And so it's exciting to be, I think, part of this huge shift in how we're working. the other shift that's the other, you know, big disruption that's happening is around AI. And I think having these large language models that are able to do basic tasks for us, you know, is like another huge wave that's going to change how we work as well. And so when you combine, you know, these things together, it's a lot of how we live and work is, I think, will look different 5 years from now than it did 5 years ago. And we're in the middle of it right now. I think it's hard to see how fast everything is changing, but I think it's an exciting time to be alive and to be working in technology.
So thanks so much for coming on today, Adam. If people want to find out more about you, find out more about what you're doing, where should they go to?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter at Adam Nathan. And if you're interested in learning more about the Modern Work Method, we have hundreds of templates for free to help you get started. And you can also try Almanac, the product, for free. And that's at almanac.io.
And like, if anybody in the audience maybe could get in touch with you, maybe help you or help Almanac, what are you looking for? Is there any way that people in the community could help you?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking for, you know, feedback on the Modern Work Method itself. I think we've added templates from contributors so far, and we'd love for you to try the product and let us know if it helps make you faster.
So again, so thanks so much for coming on. Any final words for the audience?
No. Thanks, Amardeep, for having me. It's been a real pleasure.